Welcome to Blightbringers, a Legion of Everblight focused War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm your host Ronlore, aka Tyrone, and I stole a 2-1 finish in my last tournament. Wolf is out this week with an absent laptop, so my co-host today is Cutter. Welcome to the show.
Greetings. Thank you for having me again, and yeah, I look forward to another cast.
You're always welcome. This week, we're going to cover our recent games, some of Cutter's and some of my own out of the tournament at Out of the Box that I attended this past weekend. It was a great time, so we hope you stick around and listen to our battle reports covering the list that we played and how it all went.
So I've been continuing to look at my Animag Double Chosen list paired with Veil 2. I got some games in with both of those, so I'll just go over the games that I played this week real quick and talk about some things that I learned maybe. So the first match that I had earlier in the week was against Makeda 2 with all the cats. So this is also known as Meowcada.
Yep.
If you're really into cute nicknames.
Crazy cat lady.
And so this is a guy who's kind of, he normally would play Signar. He's picking up Scorn, and he brought this list not necessarily knowing that I was bringing Animag, and I have just been mainlining Animag for a bit, so I didn't know what he was bringing either, and unfortunately that was a pretty bad matchup for him, so that's unfortunate because it turns out that Makeda 2's whole shtick kind of is one, Moloch Karn killing everything, and two, the cats basically just running around and she can keep them alive. And that doesn't work with Animag's feet, turns out. The only thing really that could kill in that list, he wasn't playing just cats. He was also playing some Citrati and some Swordsmen. So the list started falling flat on damage pretty quickly because the cats all came in and then Animag feeded and the Ogryng killed everything and the Cavalry, the Chosen killed everything, and I got a gallows off. He did do something smart in putting the Gladiator and Moloch Karn base to base. So if you're not familiar with Hellmouth shenanigans, there's a geometry that you use where you basically put two bases side by side, equidistant from the Hellmouth.
Yeah.
And by doing that, you basically make it so the Hellmouth can't pull because it pulls directly towards and it contacts the other base immediately. So the only way to get out of that is with something like Gallows, which fortunately Animag has, or Fianna or whatever. You can repulse things. You know, there are things you can do. You could use the Bolt Thrower on one of them or something. But I did get a Gallows off, and then that let me pull it in, and then the Chosen killed the Gladiator, and Moloch Karn was kind of going crazy. Or I guess, no, the Hellmouth had already died from Karn, but I did get to Gallows the Gladiator out, and then that just kind of limited things. And once the Chosen are dug in this list, I was using the Tentacles a lot to place the AoEs.
Right.
Chosen can just kind of tow into that AoE and get a lot of work out of it. And because they can also reposition, that becomes really helpful. My chief was just standing on a flag the whole time, so that didn't do a whole lot. But one thing I did learn was this was the first opportunity for my afflictor to actually do work, and it rolled triple ones. It's great. It's very appropriate for that
model. Of course
model.
It did. Of course it yep. did.
Yeah. And then, so the other funny thing is I had one fury left. So I was like, oh, whatever, I'll buy it on a cat. Maybe I'll kill it. And I did. And he's like, oh, I can actually, you haven't hit it with Grievous yet, so I'll just keep it alive with Makeda.
Oh, like, well. Great.
Good job, Afflictor.
He tried.
You were so close to doing something. I did actually use the Afflictor in the next game, though. Yeah, basically what happened was attrition just got out of hand. There was a major scenario issue. This was the one with the two rectangles kind of offset with the circle in the center and
right.
the two flags in the other corners. I can never remember the names of these things this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically it was a bad matchup for him. And the Chosen were just way too beefy with the arm buff, and Moloch Karn just couldn't get through enough before the Blightbringer could eat him. And ultimately, though, scenario was the big problem. So that was an interesting match. It kind of gave me a little bit of a feeling of where Primal Terrors can go if your opponent really isn't teching for it. So there are some lists out there that really are just not going to be able to handle it. And that's right. Kind of what my skew is about, is if I see a pairing like that, now granted the other list is probably going to be able to handle them, but then I know I can just drop it and it's kind of an easier game. Otherwise I get to play the whole list chicken scenario. So that was that game. It was mostly scenario and attrition. And then the next game was actually against Butcher One. And I want to take special attention to talk about this game because it was horrible. And I made some positioning errors. But overall, it was Butcher One with 3 full units of Bombardiers with the officers, the command attachments.
Okay.
And then 2 Covenecs and like Dracoon and a Ruin and a Marauder. And then 2 suppression tankers.
Oh God!
In this list, it was gross. It's really gross because they all get advanced move. Every unit you take gives the unit advanced move, so that's cute, right? Yeah. Well, they're not super fast. Is the thing like that's supposed to be the deal with them? That they're not that fast. But the problem is that when they get to just randomly move up the field on turn one, you're kind of screwed. So right. Yeah, the rule is for each Kador unit in this army, 1 Manowar model or unit can make advanced move.
Okay.
So it's like, take units, they get advanced move. So basically what happened with this game was I deployed my Hellmouths just to contest and made it so that this was the, I guess what people call championship belt, like the 2 rectangles with the circle in the middle.
Right.
And the 2 objectives. And I just deployed the Hellmouths behind some terrain and basically in a trench so that their defense 14 and set them up so that whatever was in the scenario pieces could be pulled out in some way, at least for part of the field. So it gave me some control over his side, and on my side, it ended up being kind of messy. What I did wrong was, if you don't know how the Bombardiers work, their command attachment makes it so if they aim as many feet as, they get an extra range attack. So under Butcher One's feet, they have conceivably 36 POW 14s that are all boosted damage.
That's a lot.
They're AoE 3s. Oh. Yeah, it is a lot. That's not great. I was kind of curious how much I could, like if I could bait the feet out. And it turns out that the ones that didn't aim but just got to walk up at speed 6 or movement 6 and then shoot 12 inches because they got buffed there too.
Right.
It was still really gross.
Oh, geez.
So they can one-shot Chosen. That's sad. And they killed all but like 2 of my warmongers who were in a trench. So even though they're defense 16, they're aiming to red 8. And they just roll well sometimes. Sometimes they don't, but the blast damage is also boosted. Yeah, it was really gross. In retrospect, he thought that maybe just killing the Blightbringer would have been a good thing to do. And that's something that I think is really key and something to keep track of is, I think he said it was like about 10 shots it would take to take down a Blightbringer in that list.
Wow.
So I didn't do the math on it, but I think that's about right. They do about 5.5 damage each. So the problem is if the Blightbringer goes down, chewing through all of those Manowar is problematic. The Warmongers and the Chosen, like they hit hard, but they don't really trade that well into that, because we won't have the Blightbringer anymore. It kills it. So he killed units instead of the Blightbringer. This was one of the grindiest matches I played in a long time. Like I got to the point where I was like, I just don't want to play this match anymore. It was just medium bases killing each other for forever, basically. And me being scared of Ruin and him being scared of the Blightbringer. And that was basically all that was going on. What did end up happening was I put my Afflictor in a position where I could kill a Manowar and then pop out an Incubi, and then the Incubi could go kill a Manowar. And then if I did that, then I could have pulled Ruin in. And if I pulled Ruin in to the Blightbringer, then like things get a lot better, because the big problem with Ruin is that he removes the armor buff on hit. So the first hit just removes it, and that's not great. I had to make sure that that unit wasn't near ruin, or at least, you know, they would hit him first. And it just ended up being a really, really grindy game. And I think at that point, we were both just kind of done with it. And he was kind of up on attrition. Like, I was having a lot of trouble killing the tankers with how I had to position the Blightbringer and the buffs I could get out. But he ended up having Iron Flesh on Butcher and didn't think I could probably kill him, but hadn't accounted for Carnage and the Withering Aura on the Blightbringer, and also a Mach removing Iron Flesh. So what he thought was going to be something like eights to hit, because I had to pull him into a house at dice off two, ended up being a lot better than that.
Okay, yeah, not bad.
So I didn't hit any crits, unfortunately. But yeah, it just, that's how it ended up ending. I think he was just kind of testing it to be like, well, let's see if Butcher can live through this, because that's kind of what I did with the Chosen and the Warmongers, was like, let's see if they can live through this.
Right.
And in both cases, the answer was no, absolutely not. I did have my Warchief stand in two zones, though, and at arm 21, he was a boss. The suppression tanker just could not kill him. The Man of War, who... they just rolled kind of low. They're already engaged. And so he got the berserk around a little bit.
What a champion.
Yeah. The big things I learned there is don't run your stuff within 12 inches of the bombardiers, even if you think you're tough. chosen things, it's not enough. And also, yeah, I kind of got Animag tangled up in a house and a Blightbringer and a Hellmouth a little bit. And after my heat smartly had gone after some of my arc nodes. So I had to use them to contest too. So it's just kind of a problem. It's a problematic list. I think it's really powerful because of all the AoE damage. And then he has Fury. So the Bombardiers can go in with Fury and the Butcher Feet. So they're Weapon Masters with Crit Shred and they're Power Strength 17. You know, it's pretty gross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't let that happen.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
Or, sorry, they would be plus strength 16. Oh, Fury.
Even so.
You know. Yeah, it was an interesting game. I think it's hard to say what the correct thing to do there is. I think it's just a pretty good list to play against medium-based spam, or also chosen. And you have to be... the big thing about that, talking after the game, is I had to be really careful with the Blightbringer, because I don't think my list could have gotten through it without the Blightbringer being there.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big threat, and Butcher and Ruin probably could have just bullied the field once the Blightbringer is dead, because the other things weren't going to kill him. So that was the big take home for that one. Also, just watch out for the Armored Core list, because that's crazy.
Yeah, sounds pretty good.
The last game that I wanted to talk about was a game that I just played tonight before this, based on someone talking about Assassinations. And so I was determined to drop Veil too, regardless of who I ended up playing against tonight, because it's, you know, sometimes you don't win less chicken anyway. So it ended up being against Scabrous Dark Host, and that's scary. It's a scary match. I've had a couple of scary matches after the Makeda 2 match. It's been a little messier. Scabrous, there are a couple of things you need to keep in mind with him, is he can kill you very early in the game. So I put Occultation on my throne immediately,
Okay. And
that's great, because thrones really, really, really don't like TK.
Yeah.
It's horrible. That's Telekinesis really... is like the worst thing for them.
It's really bad for them.
Yeah, it sucks. So having Occultation on that was really key, and I pointed it out to him too. He did forget later, but it was labeled. We talked about it. So... yeah, it's one of those things where some people, even though you'll tell them, the idea that the battle engine can be stealth seems weird to people, even if they're playing a Wraith engine, which is pretty busted with Derek Wraith, because it makes it speed 8.
Right.
So, yeah, that's cute. It's really cute. This was the one with two circles and two rectangles. I have no idea what that one's called. I ended up taking the objective to get magic weapons. In retrospect, that wasn't really necessary, because I do have a Mistspeaker and I do have the Naga in the list, and it would have just been one attack, and I wasn't really near the objective, but it would have absolutely been able to heal my angel, who got TK'd around and stabbed a couple times by Banes and had his body out. Yeah, so it would have been better for had the stockpile. Yeah, the one that heals you.
Yeah.
So that would have been way better. What ended up happening in this game was I knew that Scavarus wanted to kill me, because that's what Scavarus does, right? And he knows that I want to kill him, because that's absolutely what Vale wants to do. The benefit that I have is Icy Grip does not work on Vale. It does not work on my Ice Witches, and he can Icy Grip my Valkyries if he wants to. I don't care. That's one thing that's good. If he forgets that for some reason or whatever, great. You know, maybe he spends 1 point on his feet, 1 focus. But the thing that I really needed to do was I absolutely needed him to get the Wraith Engine away from Scavarus. That was my goal from the beginning of the game, is because Scavarus getting the extra 2 arm against range attacks and spells is not cool. I absolutely needed, I was expecting, because I run a bolt thrower with Vale, I was expecting to find some kind of weird angle to get some spells onto him, and then maybe get an Angelius into him, something like that. And even if I don't finish him off, he has to play really cagey for the rest of the game. So the Banes will run over my list, though, probably. If I was taking a different strategy, I could have used the Sorceress and the Throne and maybe an Angel or a Carnivian or something to try to mow the Banes down. But there's just a lot of them, and even just a few Banes is a big problem. And I didn't want to get my units near Tartarus, because then he starts refilling the Banes. So he moved up pretty aggressively, and I did something that was kind of risky, I guess, in that I took a shot at his cavalry right away, even knowing that they had vengeance, because some of them were behind a wall. The other ones I didn't think could really get into me, but I wanted him to focus down my Carnivian, and maybe it would live, but probably not. And the most important thing was that I thought he would probably bring the Wraith Engine in to try and kill it. It was behind a forest, but the Wraith Engine, I thought was going to have to run, but I didn't realize it was speed 8. So that was a learning opportunity for me to have a speed 8 incorporeal battle engine. It's with very, Dark Shroud.
It's very fast. Oh my god. I think it's scary. Yeah.
Yep. So I ended up assaulting my Carnivian at it, because I could see it through the forest. And I did hit it for decent damage. I think I did like 10 damage to it. And then, or I did 8. The Angelius I slipstreamed up, and it took a shot at it too. So one thing that I screwed up in my order of activations was I put Wraithbane on the Carnivian, even though I knew I was going to put Spiny Growth on it. I had intended to put Guidance. The reason that's important is because if you're assaulting and you're not getting all the way to the model, your activation is going to end at the end of the assault, and it doesn't give you the opportunity to put Spiny Growth up. So I had to cast Guidance on it, wasting my Wraithbane resources.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Basically, I should have done things slightly differently. That's kind of one of the things that you have to think about a lot in Legion, is we have some shenanigans, but they can trip over themselves sometimes. So in the Carnivian's case, getting the Guidance on it before it assaults so that it can Spiny Growth and not knock it off, because you can only have one Animus on yourself at a time, then assault in, and ended up hitting the objective. And that's one thing that's interesting, is you can't target objectives before the second player's second turn, but you can hit them. You can't damage them, but you can light them on fire. So the objective was on fire for the rest of the game. The game ended shortly after, so it didn't end up mattering at all. But that's something cute that you can do to it if that ever comes into play. So yeah, basically it was just a lot of positioning to try and get him to overextend. And he did run the Wraith and really walk the Wraith Engine 8 inches up across the forest to get enough range. He could TK it too, because, you know, battle engines can be TK'd. And he ended up TKing a bunch of Banes and TK'd my Sorceress and Hellion around. And I wanted to give him a lot of targets, basically. I wanted him to spend a lot of focus, and I had admonition on my angel. I triggered that a little prematurely. I should have waited until I thought that getting it engaged and behind a forest and everything was enough, But the thing that I had not been really thinking about was how much he could TK his own stuff all over the place to get the direct lines and, you know, TK auto hits friendly models, and all of its attacks are boosted, and his TKs cost one focus on his feet turn. It's a lot. So you just have to be really, really, really cagey with him. And I was basically betting 100% on assassination. And if it didn't go my way, like, I could have gotten him on clock, because that's another thing that my Veil list does, is it presents so many things that are going on that, especially with someone like Scavarus, who's also melting their brain trying to activate everything, it's a major clock sink. And I'm a lot more familiar with my Veil list than he is with Scavarus list. So, and I've also played Crix, he hasn't played Legion. So I knew that I had an advantage there too. And I had to end the game. I couldn't let it run over time because I had to record this tonight. So basically the whole way that this went down was he got the Carnivian. I had put some damage on the Wraith engine, and even though it healed a couple points on his maintenance turn, I did end up getting it down. The Seraph moved the Angelius out of the way after it had been charged by a couple Bane Knights who had been TK'd all over the place and got Death Ride. So the throne cleaned them up pretty well, and getting ice cages onto Scavarus let me get enough. I did miss some of them, so I couldn't get all of them, but I got a couple points onto him with a spine burst that I needed to clear some stuff out of the way. And it was actually enough that it ended up mattering. So, you know, always keep track of things like spine burst. It can be really useful. I was betting a lot on assassination. I had to clear out a ton of stuff with the throne, and I had to get the Wraith engine out of the way. But ultimately, because the Angelius started within 11 inches of Scavarus, I could just slipstream at 2 inches and walk at 7. And then it was within 9 of a Scavarus that had an ice cage or two on him. And then I had Puppet Master on it, and I rerolled my armor piercing damage to be brutal, and then I had to end up buying attacks to kill him. But it got pretty close. The spine burst did end up mattering, and I couldn't actually get Veil onto him. So one of the other things I had in my pocket was Veil didn't feat. I didn't need to feat with her. I spent a bunch of her fury putting occultation on myself and admonition on the angel and healing the angel and doing some other stuff. But I had a solid assassination run without feeding, so I couldn't get a good angle on him. It would have been really dicey to try and get enough stuff cleared and get a shot onto something to start casting spells on him with Veil. So I actually ended up just holding the feat with the expectation that, okay, if this fails miserably somehow, then I still have Veil with her feet. Scavarus has already used his feet. Attrition is going to go south immediately for me because I spent a lot of my activation clearing stuff out for the assassination, but I would still have Veil's feet, and that's scary. It's a scary thing to be facing down. So I still would have had a couple beasts, some models running around, so he wouldn't have been on much life, and that's something that I missed from Veil back in the day, when you could just throw a blitz out everywhere. And if you didn't kill him, great. You just refuge away, and then you keep playing the game. So that's kind of what I was doing with her this game, was looking at how can I get him to expend as many resources as possible, killing as much as possible. Made some slight miscalculations on defense 18 Angel actually not being that difficult to hit for Scavarus. So some stuff like that, definitely I could have done a little bit better. But the theme overall is the way the Veil list works is you put a lot out there and you try to get them to spend resources and overextend themselves with the idea of, okay, you just need to open up an assassination lane and that's your lane to victory. So the list has a Carnivian, it has a throne, it has some high defense stuff, specifically because I want them to spend resources trying to kill it, because that's what opens them up to assassination. Once they see that, and it happens, you know, in my meta, because people play against my Veil too, they stop doing that. And that's fine too, because once they stop expending resources to try and kill my stuff, because they know that there's like this crazy Veil assassination coming in, they're either going to melt their brain trying to figure out all the angles that Veil can come at them and try to still spend their resources. that usually will end up causing other mistakes or clock issues, or they'll just play really cagey and they won't extend to kill my stuff, and then that actually makes my stuff more powerful. So if they don't want to kill a Carnivian, the Carnivian, I'll just keep being super aggressive with it until they finally commit to it, and then I kill them. It's kind of the idea.
Yeah,
and great. Yeah, I mean, it's a thing where if a good player is playing you, they're going to be a little bit more aware of angles. They're going to be aware of the assassination. But it's the same idea with the Hellmouth, in that the Hellmouth's strength isn't in pulling things necessarily. It's in the threat of pulling things and making people play around that. Veil 2 is very similar in that the assassination you can expect to not work against strong players, but they have to play around it. And that's a kind of control that I find really appealing. And because I've played the list so much, I can leverage that a lot easier than they can wrap their head around all the stuff going on, all the angles and the knockdowns and pushes and the clouds that are going out and no shooting and auto damage and ice cages and spine bursts and influence and all this other puppet master stuff that's going all over. It's difficult to like figure all that out with, you know, a Carnivian that gets slipstreamed and then gets boundless charge and then assaults. So now it's effectively assaulting 12 inches and spraying 10 more. So you have a 22 inch threat on a continuous fire POW 14. So stuff like that's really crazy. Or like the Angelius that gets slipstreamed and boundless charged, so it threats 16 inches. The throne being able to spine burst off of everything. It's just a tremendous amount of stuff going on, and it's very easy to overlook some of those things in the list. And when they do, you either scalpel things out or you just kill them and punish them in some way or another. So that's my Veil list. That's how I play it. I know it's a little bit different than how your Veil list is designed, but I have a lot of fun with it and I have a ton of reps with it. And ultimately, even though it looks a little flimsy on the surface, it fits how I like playing her a lot. So that's an idea of how you might want to look at playing Veil, or maybe some other casters. The twins are kind of similar in their own way.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you for sharing your experience with that Veil list. It sounds interesting. I like the Carnivian for sure, because like I mentioned last episode, I was having trouble breaking armor, and I think that might just be the thing I need.
The Carnivian is really good. It also has open fists. It gives you a defensive animus, which I think is great for Veil, because I always put spiny growth on myself, and that plus two armor can be a big deal. The spiny growth on the battle engine actually gave it enough chip damage that I ended up killing it a little earlier than I would have otherwise, and because it does D3 to it for all of its three attacks.
Right.
So I put a handful of damage on it. And also, if I do take the Valkyries out, I might put in a Bloodseer. I have them in there right now to help with shooting matchups and with scenario a little bit. But a Bloodseer would be able to pick up the Carnivian Animus too. And then you have a arm 20 light wandering around. That's pretty good.
All right. Before we get into my tournament games, we're going to welcome Swamp Mist to the show. Swamp Mist, how you doing, buddy?
Hello.
Welcome.
I
kind of jumped in earlier and we edited that out.
Yeah, I did not get the memo on how this was working. So the Wraith engine is, you said it was speed what?
8 with Derek Wraith.
Oh, Derek. Okay, that's what I was missing. Okay,
yep.
That's why I was confused.
That's beating.
Yeah, it's a big threat because it's actually speed 10 because it can be TK'd. And then you might TK the other thing too. So it's effectively 12 inches with 2-inch threat. So that's like a 14-inch threat on that thing walking.
It's pretty good.
So, hello everyone. My name is Zane, otherwise known as Swamp Mist. And I played some Legion, and I'm playing some more Legion this weekend.
Right on. What are you planning on playing for your Legion stuff?
Yeah, so last Wednesday, I played Veil 1. Because
Veil 1
put on the Discord.
All right.
So it turns out that when you forget to put your throne on the table, and you forget that a Zadesh has countercharge, sometimes you still almost assassinate Zadesh.
Seems good.
Veil is actually really interesting. I brought the BFS and I did the math. And Angelius with Insight and Kiss one rounds turtle by 3 points of overkill on average.
Oh, jeez.
So through either the Agonizer or Rash's feat is the big deal.
Right.
So it kills an effective arm 22 turtle.
Pretty decent.
So if the angel can live to then, you get a really solid chance to just assassinate the turtle and then veil feet and just get your angel in a really weird place.
Right.
But I forgot the countercharge is the thing, so I got all my pieces countercharged, and the bugs got in a position where they stopped the angel from just charging Zadesh, because you're actually dice plus a bajillion, and she gives him a 4 point, and she gives a 4 point mat swing. So even charging into a burning ash cloud, I needed a boosted 7 to hit the charge attack.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
But because I let a countercharge happen off of my Seraph, he got to put the bug in a place where it was getting a free strike when I charged his caster. So,
boo.
But what I do need to remember on the flip side of that is that Slipstream does not proc it, so I can abuse that a little bit.
Yeah, Slipstream is a place, not advance.
Yep, also the leaps from a rake if you happen to have a rake.
So those are both things that can kind of mess with Zadesh. I don't know that she's good, but she actually felt like reasonably okay. And that was with me totally forgetting to deploy the throne.
Cool.
So did they let you put the throne on later? Or did you just not play with it?
You just let me put it in my... I lost because I failed that assassination and the bug was in walking range of Veil. But I placed the throne... Or he let me place it like on my board edge. And then yeah. I just had to try to run it up, which wasn't great.
Yeah, it's a little slow.
Well, at least it's better than just not having it at all.
But, also, if it was in the game, I can win that game even more so by landing 3 ice cages onto that one bug and just freezing it, and then it doesn't get to free strike my angel.
Right, yeah, that would work.
So,
cool.
That's one of those things where, it would have changed things. And then this weekend, I'm going to a team event, and assuming that all of the models come in, which is not a guarantee, if they don't come in, I'm going to be forced to play Menoth just because I don't have a pairing. If not, and hopefully not, I'll be probably playing Abby 1, Oracles, and Animag PT.
All right, that seems good.
Yeah, Animag being chosen, Double War Spears, Rotwings, Blightbringer, Amok, Gremlin Swarm, Spellmartyr, and Free Hellmouth.
Yeah, I found Spellmartyrs to be super helpful, Animag, or with Abby 1. Epsilonia 1 also really likes them.
I've got one in both. There's one in both lists. I'm playing 2 ships, I think.
Yeah, I find for the first couple games with Animag, you might even just use them because you're out of position, and that can help round out some of the mistakes early on, and then eventually you can start leveraging more for gallows and stuff into Hellmouths.
Yeah, for sure. And also, someone pointed out that you can, if you keep it back, you can just snack it with her.
Yep.
If you're cutting.
There's some really cute tech that I was doing with when I was only running a Blightbringer, is if you're running Hellmouths, you can actually just have her eat the tentacles and she heals herself.
Oh my god, she can eat the... Okay, I no longer worry about cutting. I no longer have to worry about cutting.
Delicious. It's super cute. You know, she likes calamari because they just keep coming back and she's like, oh, I'll just eat that one and, you know, maybe buy one or something.
All right, so that sounds like you'll have a good time at the team tournament. What are your teammates bringing, though? I think it's double scoring, right?
It's Dan Schwenke from Battle Driven and Fabint from the Discord. Both of them are bringing Scorn. Not going to say what they're bringing.
No, fair enough.
I'm fine giving out my own information.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be super common to see a triple hordes a team, that's for sure.
If nothing else, it randomly brews over Shadows of the Retribution. So Shadows... All of their damage output is Jack only, and we're playing 3 Hordes players.
Yeah.
So it super screws that list's ability to deal damage.
Neat. Right on. So I attended a tournament this past weekend at Out of the Box in Ottawa, hosted by George Schweizer of Moose Machine. Super nice guy. Also, huge shout-outs to the Ottawa meta for putting me up over the weekend. Really kind of saved me some cash, and I got to hang out with some sweet dudes, so that was awesome. I brought the list that we built on the show last week, which ended up being Animag with Golab, Zuriel, and Azrael, with Swordsman, Raptor, Mistspeaker, and some support. I didn't actually drop it at all. I just played Veil 2 because I liked blowing things up, and it's super fun. First round was against Kruger 2, the typical Wold list. He had two Wold Watchers, I want to call them. Two Wold Weirds, Megalith, had the Battle Engine, had the Sentry Stones, and a unit of Shifting Stones. That matchup, I played actually before I had gone to the tournament with the Animag list, and it was miserable because I didn't threat any of his stuff. So it ended up just being, all right, well, I gotta drop Veil because at least I threat a million miles, right? I have my Slipstream, I got the Boundless Charge, I can deal with this. First thing he does is he blows up my Angel, who I had Admonition on. Oops.
Wold Weirds, man.
They're so good. So that was very sad for me. But he did end up making a mistake where he trampled into the forest to try and get to the Sorceress and Hellion on the other side that said no shooting. And he ended up not having, like, the ability to hit it because he TK'd himself, trampled, bought an attack, and then he was full, so he couldn't boost. So he needed to Raw Dog an 8, and it just didn't happen. It ended up not really mattering, but I got a Watcher for free, was pretty much what came out of that. And then Battle Engine...
You mean a Warden for free?
Oh, Wold Warden. Yeah, you're right. That's what I meant. Yeah, not Wold Watcher, sorry. Wold Wardens. So then on my turn, I take the Wold Warden, and I think I took it with a Scythian, I forget. And then I take the Throne, and I charge one of his mannequins, killing it. And then I put a Eruption of Spines onto his Battle Engine. Roll the 6 on the leaps, so I get 3 dudes, so I get... two things that were base-to-base, I think they were Stonekeepers. And then I got Kruger and put 3 damage onto him, which was pretty sweet. And then Veil just walks up, feats, and dirt naps Kruger through all of her chasins. I think I still have my Deadly Storm left over, so it was actually pretty good. But the game didn't last too long. The only model I killed was Kruger, and the only model he killed was... I think he killed my Angel and something else. So that was a quick game. The second game... into Retribution. He ended up picking Ron. So I think I won first turn. I go up pretty aggressively behind some forests. He runs into position. And then I ask my opponent how much respect I have for Ron. And the reply was 0. I'm like, perfect. So this is where everything unravels, though. Because I get so focused on the assassination. Which is like, it was completely reasonable. It was pretty good odds. If I just sort out my thoughts beforehand, right? And what I did instead was just an absolute comedy of mistakes, one after the other, where I tied up my Battle Engine so I couldn't actually run it into position where it needed to be. I managed to kill a whole unit of Battle Mages, which was nice, but again, the Seraph was in the way, so I couldn't put the friggin' Throne up within 10 inches or 8 inches of Ron, which was irritating. And I had, like, multiple opportunities to cast Puppet Master, you know, in between my activations. I just had to say, oh, I'm activating the Witches and I'm casting Puppet Masters. And I didn't at all. So I ended up charging my Angelius into Ron with their armor-piercing attack. Like, I cleared a path, and he didn't have Puppet Master, and he missed, obviously, because that's how that works. So that was bad. So I ended up putting Admonition on it. I think he still had it from the beginning of the game, I forget. And so I passed turn, and he's like, well, now I can try and kill you. And I'm like, yep. Fortunately, I'd put Occultation on Veil, realizing that she's super in trouble because of all the pushes with the other unit of Battle Mages and Ron and Helios in that list. I was like, all right, well, Veil gets Occultation, I guess. And he moved up a unit of Battle Mages. What happened first? So he TKs me with an Arc Node from the Light. Then he TKs my Sorceress out of the way. He moves a unit of Battle Mages to try and drag Veil. And he does, but he only drags her like 2 inches. And so he hits her with the first one, drags me 2 inches. And because I had Occultation up, no one else was in range. And the assassination just ended there. Yeah, it was real bad. He ended up doing a couple other things. Then he ends his turn. He's like, I think I'm going to concede. Because he had Ron literally right beside Nigelius that didn't die somehow. Because I think he threw me. And then he had no other really means to get onto it. Or if he did, but I don't think he killed it. I was like, well, fair enough. So that game ended with me scoring 20 points for the unit of Battle Mages and first caster.
So you flubbed your activations and failed to assassinate
him. Oh, it was horrible. Yeah.
And flubs his activation and fails to assassinate you.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then he's just like, well, I guess we're back to my caster being in melee with an Angelius?
Yeah, and he's like, well, I'm super dead. I'm like, yeah, you're super dead. I was like, all right, good game, I guess. It was it was the worst game I've ever played, but also like super fun.
It was the worst, best game.
So, you know, take that for what you will.
Yep.
Third game against Kador, I ended up losing the roll, but he wanted sides. So he took the side and I just got first. I end up being pretty stupid and not contesting zones because I was really focused on killing his warjacks. But I spread out instead of focusing down the two warjacks I could get onto. So I managed to kill one, and then I left like Behemoth on like half life. But I had crippled one of his arms, which he forgot to repair, which was nice for me. But pretty much he just beat the hell out of my Angelius, my Scythian, and then throws her Avagor out of the zone. Goes 6-0, and I was like, ah, yep, that sucked. That was pretty much that game. Kador, every time I see it across the table, I just lose all sense of reason. Because I like my win rate against him is literally 1%. And I was like, I don't know what to do here. And his caster was also immune to fire and corrosion. So my Seraph and my Angelius were not as useful as I'd like them to be on the assassination runs. So I was kind of just like, well, this is not a fun game. But like my opponent played it super well. I was definitely just kind of like, I was bad that game for sure. But I mean, all three of my games were kind of a disaster. I think I lost 50 points of models over the three games. They were pretty quick. It was super fun. I would love to go again. That's for sure. All right.
No, sounds awesome.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. Like, I hadn't been out to a tournament since the Sioux. And so it was a nice little, like, refresher of just kind of getting out there and hanging out with folks.
I think this weekend's my first since the Sioux.
All right on.
And so I was going to go to a Liberty Brawl qualifier down by New York City. Yes, yesterday. And I get up at 7 a.m. or 6 a.m. and I'm like, hey, Schwanky, what's up? And apparently Riker's car had broken down in Schwanky's driveway.
Oh, no. That's bad.
So they call the towing guy and I go back to bed because they say they don't know if they're leaving. I get back up at 7. I'm like, okay, what's the plan? And he's like, well, the tow guy was supposed to be here at 7 and he's not here yet. So I get up and go eat breakfast and stuff, expecting the repair guy to be there around then and we can get out at that point. 7:45, I text him again, and he's like, yeah, the repair guy, the tow guy never showed up.
Oh, jeez.
So,
Oh, well.
So, yeah, I did not go to that because, yeah.
Yeah, I was supposed to go to the same tournament. And what happened for me was I didn't realize how awful the U.S. postal system is if you live in New York City, because I had my double chosen held at the post office because it wouldn't be delivered on a Saturday otherwise, ran to the post office and found out that if you hold a package from a business, they won't actually, because I was sending it to my office, they won't let you pick it up. So I got them not delivered. And then I couldn't go. Well, I could have gone to the tournament, I guess, maybe, if I had found a ride, but I really wanted double chosen for that. So,
yeah, oh, well. Enough.
Well, yeah, so we were both supposed to go to the same one, even though we live many hours apart.
Yeah, it turns out, some of the New Yorkers are a little bit starved for games, so we're willing to head down to New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But
okay, well, we were going to talk about some Spawny Whistle topics, but I think we're kind of nearing an hour, so what we'll do is we'll save that for next week, post lock and load. But what I kind of want to do is ask you guys, what do you think the new faction is going to be this year?
New minions.
New minions.
Possibly Zoo?
I don't think it'd be a sub-faction. I think that'd be a mistake.
So they have said there will be, some of the new factions will be sub-factions like Cephalix.
Oh, that seems bad, because the one thing I want them to do is to take Cephalix and make them their own faction.
So, yeah, it seems they're going the opposite direction. They are going to be releasing more Cephalix-sized sub-factions. Grant you, I think if it's a minions faction, it's more likely to, like, they're probably going to be allowed outside of their own, like, they're not going to do the Cephalix thing again, where you're only allowed at Cephalix.
Yeah.
I would suspect it'd be like, because that already works in minions, you would be able to play them in their own theme and will work for food.
Right.
Is what I would expect.
Okay.
So that's, I'm going to call it as some new minions faction. And if I had to give a specific, I'm going to say Zoo.
Yeah, that was the hot one like last year or the year before.
And if I had to give us a guess as to what their theme, one of their theme benefits would be, FA 3 plus for Totem Hunters.
Oh, okay. The Totem Hunter is a character right now, right? So you think that...
No, it's just FA 1, I believe, not a character.
Okay, maybe that's what it was in Mark 2 or something. Yeah, it's FA 1.
All right, I'll allow it. So
there could be a theme that makes FA more FA for Totem Hunters.
That'd be cool.
And you just have a faction where they're like three free cards, all are Totem Hunters.
Cutter?
Like, oh no.
Yes.
I really do like Totem Hunters. I haven't really played them very much, if at all. I don't remember the last time I played one. I may have not even put one on the table in Mark 3.
There are a lot of points in their minion slot, which often is better served with something else, especially now that Mistspeaker exists. It's tough to justify. What do you think, Cutter? What is your thoughts for this year's faction at Lock and Load?
So, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't have any base for speculation either.
Fair enough, man. Nothing wrong with that. All right, so that'll do for this week for the 7th episode of Bladebringers. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Have a good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.